Hi, everybody. Glad you could join us. Oh my gosh, it is the November 24th, 2020 Platinum and A to Z call. Kind of stunning that we are at the end of November and Thanksgiving is around the corner. Very exciting. So if you have not been on the calls before, the way we do it is people just pipe in with their questions as there's space in the conversation. Please don't be shy. Don't wait till the end of the call and then say, oh, I didn't get my question answered. So just be bold. Be like you want your puppies to be. Jump in. And if two people want to talk at the same time, we will work it out. Teal says, with all the red flags that have been raised with Embark with some of their health tests, do you think I need to test my puppies of Aria for bleeding disorders by a different company? She was clear of all breeding disorders, but Embark is, you can imagine, I'm terrified to think about cutting anyone at this point. Oh, Teal, I wish I had a great Embark answer. I don't.
So I don't even have bleeding disorders in my breed. And honestly, I don't even know if that was a component. She wasn't bleeding.
It was a component.
Well, it was.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
when they closed, we had hemostasis. That she was fine. She had no bleeding. I'm almost positive I know when she started bleeding because she dropped on me. Mm-hmm. And then it took 20 minutes to get to the clinic, and then when we opened her, I mean, it was a gusher, so there's no way this was missed on close.
So did you test her for bleeding disorders? Remind
through
me
Embark, she's clear for everything, but I don't.
So, but on necropsy, all we know is that Embark, she's clear on everything.
Yeah, and honestly, Gail, I didn't send her.
Okay. Yeah, I totally understand
too. Decisions.
Yeah, no, those are just awful moments. So the problem that you're going to have is that most other companies won't test a breed that isn't known for having the genetic test.
That's what I thought.
The genetic disease, you know, because they don't have any. You know, it's the strength of Embark and the weakness of Embark simultaneously. So Embark tests for everything, and yet 95% of it doesn't pertain to that breed.
Right.
Exactly.
And her clotting times were fine. So even, I mean, we ran them 3 times and her clotting times were fine.
So
she just had a massive bleed for some reason that she just couldn't recover from. She just went into shock and DIC and all kinds of nasty, nasty stuff. So.
Yeah, sort of, I mean, I hate to link it, but sort of a hemangio bleed out where, you know, there's just not stopping it.
So she was off the table at 1 p.m. She was back on the table at 9 p.m. after she dropped at 8 p.m. She probably had 2 abdominal fulls, like that's how much she lost. And then they got it stopped. She recovered. She was sternal. Give me a second.
Yeah, I know.
Dropped her at emergency because she was sternal. I was like, you know, we're okay. We got out of the woods. And then it just all, then she went VTAC and all kinds of stuff. So lots of lidocaine. I mean, they threw stuff at her that they shouldn't have just because it's the only thing we could do. But she just couldn't, I think she just lost too much to even recover.
Right.
And her PCV was 47.
Wow.
So that makes no sense other than.
It makes no sense.
She was so dehydrated except for ice. Balling was slamming 4 liters of fluids in her as they're trying to get the bleed done. So there's none of it makes any sense. I mean, she got head of starch thrown at her. She got, I mean, all shock trauma stuff was thrown. And then, I mean, her PCV kept dropping, you know, as she was on fluids at the referral clinic. And at 27, he was like, I think we need to transfuse her. And I was like, do it.
Right.
I don't care.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Then it was, I mean, I don't know anybody that would have transfused at 47.
No, so, no, I agree.
I don't know.
I,
I'm terrified to touch these dogs. Everybody was, I mean, I was doing her this month, and in 2 weeks I was to do another Pexi. In 2 weeks I was supposed to do another Pexi. One, my work won't touch my dogs again, just because they, I mean, it's my best friend's my vet. I mean, this whole thing.
Well, I'm sure just completely traumatic to them.
Awful. And so I got to do specialty, but I don't even, I mean, even if a specialist did the surgery, I don't think the outcome would be any different because I saw, and I mean, I know what kind of surgeon she is. And so I just, I'm done.
I'm sorry, Teal. I know. I mean, let's just sort of think it through because I don't have an answer for you. She's negative for everything. Mm-hmm. And so unless it's a dominant gene, the puppies can't, it doesn't even matter. If, I mean, I guess it, if
once she's
they,
had four,
they could have made an error. I guess that's, have you reached out to them?
I just didn't know if I needed to send clotting to someone else because, or bleeding disorders, because, you know, I know some of the stuff has been not great on some of their research.
Right. So I, well, and they're testing, frankly, you know, yeah. they certainly have had their issues. So I think what I would recommend, one, I'll just tell everybody that Good Dog is, it has connected with Embark and Paw Prints, and there's going to be a December sale that looks pretty good. So if you're close to running genetics on a dog, wait until December if you're a good dog breeder. You have to be a good dog breeder, but you can sign up now to get in and get the deal. The second thing though, Teal, is I think I would reach out to Lisa at, or Casey at Paw Prints, Dr. Casey at Paw Prints, and Embark.
Okay.
And say, this is, you know, summary of what happened. My dog is negative for all bleeding disorders. I'm not questioning the test results because there isn't a bleed, you know, there just isn't anything for the breed. Do you think that there is testing that would be worthwhile on my puppies to help me make a decision whether I can spay them, whether I can neuter them, whether I can trim their toenails?
God, I don't know if I can spay a dog again.
I know. Teal, I'll just share. I lost a dog doing hip x-rays many years ago.
Lost the one in crop. I lost.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's, none of this has been easy. Everything that's supposed to be, you know, one in, you know.
Yeah. Just.
Or 10 litters or whatever. I got all of my first three and I'm just like, what the, whatever.
Yeah, it's, I'm sorry. We're sending you strength. Like, even just strength, even if you say I'm not breeding again, just strength to sort of put it all in place and recover.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a year away from even beginning to think about, well, and the next one to be bred is one that's in a guardian home. And it's like, okay, great. I have my family and their family I have to worry about. But like, she had a surgical AI. She had a GI obstruction surgery. And she had two C-sections prior to this. No bleeding problems at all. Now, granted, none of those were working with major arteries. And I mean, she's a 140-pound dog that was spayed at six. So those arteries were pumping into that uterus. I mean, it was made for babies. So I understand it being different. But like, this was so out of left field that, I mean, my daughter sat in on the spay because she wanted to see it. And
Not doing
not
that
the second
again.
One, obviously, but yeah.
I mean, there absolutely could be an unknown bleeding disorder, now?
I have a pio breed. Like, what do I do?
No, you have to spay. I mean, I think you have to somehow try and work your way through. Have you talked to your national club? Yeah, I'm sorry. I've asked before, so never mind.
No, I mean, honestly, I'm also dealing with the fact that someone decided to take it upon themselves to take my one dog that failed health testing, add it to the database so that they could totally rake me over the coals for having this horrible breeding program. So my breed community is nothing.
Not going to pursue.
And another reason why I just need to be done and switch it up. But yeah, no, my breed club, if I mention any of this, and I am talking in my circles who I trust, like I can't, I'm going to have to put a statement out because I have a dog that died at six. So all the rumor mills are going. Because my big thing is longevity. And now, you know, my foundation bitch is dead at 6.5.
Teal, are you in Good Dog?
I am.
Okay. So I think you should also reach out. Don't do it today. You know, wait till Thanksgiving's over to Judy. So mm-hmm. Judy Stella is their researcher.
Okay.
I'm putting her name and her email because the benefit of getting them involved is they may be able to see sort of across breeds if there is another bleeding disorder that's cropping up either in similar breeds.
Yeah.
And, you know, the nice thing about Good Dog right now is they're pretty willing to throw money at research and maybe connect with AKCCHF or something along those lines. Because, you know, you can sort of look at it in two ways or three ways. You can just say, I'm done. I'm out of here. I'm not doing this anymore. You can sit there sort of in that paralysis, or you can say, okay, I'm going to figure the research out. I'm going to either find the funding, find the researcher, find something to try and get some good out of this. And I personally usually take the latter approach, and it just makes me feel really good for my dog. So I would definitely make sure all your puppy owners have Yunnan Biao on hand personally.
Yeah, I we do. And it's sent home just because, not that, I mean, Hemangiosarc isn't huge in my breed, but it is in some of the like breeds. So we talk about that a lot. So, I mean, and they were the first to know, you know, I asked them to give me like a week or two if they wanted bigger details than, you know, she died post-op spay, because I needed to digest it myself, and they've all been great. Thankfully, I don't have all my, well, no, not all my females are spayed yet. I mean, all of her puppies so far have gone through spay just fine. So...
yeah, I mean, it does sound like something changed in her, because she had had a surgical AI, you know, it's not, although doesn't touch the arteries, you know.
Right. Nothing touched anything.
You know, I'm trying to pull up the breeder's name. I don't see. So we had a Samoyed breeder who's still in the program. I don't think I'm seeing her on. And her bitch died at like 59 days post-ovulation, pregnant, very pregnant. I don't know the name of the artery, just blew up. I wonder if it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. And she died on the kitchen floor. I mean, there was no getting her to the vet. There was nothing. She was dead in a minute. Let me pursue that, because I wonder if it actually was unrelated, coincidental. So it wasn't a bleeding disorder, just a major artery ruptured from stress, from not because anything happened in the surgery, but simply because it was a ticking time bomb. There was an aneurysm or something like that. I'll go back. I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank on the name I've said. But I wonder if that was it.
And I'm never going to know, probably, because I mean, I didn't post her.
Right. No, but if you can get an explanation that is not a genetic explanation, that has a real logic to it, then at least you're not sitting there gnawing on, like, how do I go find a gene that doesn't exist, you know, that we don't know exists.
What am I doing with you now?
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry, Teal. I know, I know it's a heartbreak. Yep. Just beyond a heartbreak.
Yeah. Thanks for talking it out with me.
Yeah. Laura, I think Laura's next. Let me see. Yes. I'm revising my intro letter. If you want to unmute Laura, I send in response to puppy inquiries in the intro letter. I tell them about you, your kennel, breeding philosophy. Also take the opportunity to educate potential puppy homes. I'd like to add sections on what to ask breeders and what to ask potential veterinarians. Can you talk, Laura?
Yeah.
There you are. Mm-hmm. How are you?
I'm being a domestic goddess myself today.
There you go. Oh, I love it. I love it. That's great.
Actually, roasting pumpkins. It's really hard to find canned pumpkin right now.
So it's impossible. I have a whole freezer full of pumpkin that I've been working on, and I have four more to do.
Exactly. So that's what I'm doing now, roasting pumpkins.
Sounds good. So there's quite a bit of information online about what to ask about breeders. So that you can probably duplicate. The what to ask potential veterinarians, you know, you can come at it from one of two ways. You can come at it in the general puppy, just a puppy buyer, or you can put some of your values into it on what you want to encourage people to do with their veterinarian, you know, to, you know, it's kind of hard to ask a veterinarian, are you willing to partner with me in the care of my dog, as opposed to, you know, direct me in the care of my dog. But that's kind of what you want them to get to. I don't know. Why don't you guys chime in? What would you ask? I mean, we all sort of know, but it's a whole different thing for a puppy buyer to ask, you know, to have that conversation.
Yeah, and especially since many of these puppy buyers, they're a pet home perhaps, or a new person. And so they're not really comfortable with directing the vet. But I want to, before a puppy goes to their new home, I want them to have selected a vet. And so what are they looking for?
Yeah, and I think that's different than what do you ask the vet? Because you can get a lot of information from a vet's website. Mm-hmm. And that's how I do a lot of the screening. So my puppy buyers have to tell me who their vet is, whether a current vet or a new vet, if they're, you know, don't have a dog. And I go to the website and I'm looking for blog posts about spaying and neutering at 6 months, which I think in my breed is a real problem. I would like them to have an idea of what the vet's puppy series is. So that's a reasonable question for them to ask. What's your puppy vaccine series? It is really hard for a novice person to hold a conversation with 99% of the vets in the world, because they don't have any knowledge with which to have that conversation, and they're talking to a professional. And so brutally difficult. Janet says she speaks to the vet. Janet, are you there? Can you unmute? I see you. Maybe she can't unmute. Want me to try?
No, I
oh, there you are. Hey, so what kind of a conversation do you have with the vet?
A lot of it is specifically around the collie MDR1 issues. My feelings on vaccinations. It's taken me a long time to reach the point of having that conversation, so I know it's hard for puppy buyers too. I used to give out pages and pages, and I've had buyers tell me, oh yeah, they looked at it and they dumped it in the wastebasket. So when I'm interviewing for vets, I'm still driving 50 miles one way to my old repro vet. So even looking up here in the past 15, 20 years, I challenge them on what they know, as a kind of test, which probably isn't fair, but, I want the vet to know that I am involved in the puppy's or the dog's life with this person. So I put my foot in their door.
And how do the conversations usually go?
Generally fine, really. They hear me, And oftentimes these people have had this vet for a long time. I haven't had anybody with a new vet. In fact, the most recent one, the receptionist was so glad to hear that this older person was getting another dog because they were so traumatized when the dog died for this man. So I just try to put the information out there specifically about the collies and what do you know and what do you have available to treat these dogs? What's your protocol for a surgery? What's in the anesthetic? I always say, treat everybody as if they have the MDR1 and treat to the effect and not the dose by weight. It's little things like that. All these new drugs that are out there, less is more.
And do you think that, have you seen a benefit from doing it? I'm assuming since you've continued to do it, but do you feel like the vets are more open to the guidance you're sending through their puppy buyer, through the puppy buyers, their clients?
I should probably have a follow-up conversation, but I usually, when I hear if the buyers then have trouble, I would step in, but, I find that I also am there to assist them and encourage them to not be, I equate it to my mother who is, she defers to her doctors and the fact that she has women doctors now as opposed to men doctors, you just sort of say it's a new approach and you have to advocate for your dog. And, you know, at the same time, I continually hear of stories of, you know, the vet will just pop a heartworm pill in the dog's mouth. Not mine. I haven't experienced it, but other breeder collie friends have, you know, so they do know it, but they don't always react.
Absolutely. Anything you're going to do to my dog, let's have a conversation before you do it. I mean, we just learned that with Eve's litter where the vet took her in the back and just popped her some oxytocin.
Right. It's the other thing. You don't let them take them out of your sight. Like
you don't have a choice anymore. I mean, there's no choice here.
I've been banned from a local vet because I questioned, like, my regular vet said, take one stool sample in. If one puppy has worms, they all do. They wouldn't treat me. And I questioned it and they don't want to be questioned. So I guess I have it in the record that I can be difficult, but that's okay with me.
You have the little red flag on your folder. I always look over the top of, and I'm like, oh, is that me with the little red flag? I don't think they do that anymore, but they used to.
Yeah, no, my vet doesn't anymore. In fact, I had an emergency and the woman was a liver specialist and my vet was able to say, no, she just asks a lot of questions and she's on top of things. So, but yeah, that's just the way I am at this point.
Laura, is that helpful? Do you have any questions you want to ask Janet?
No, that's all good. I'm just wondering if there might be some more suggestions that anybody might have.
Barb? Questions. I can see Barb.
What I do is, basically on my website, have the questions to ask breeders and things like that. So people just scanning through, you know, we'll get some information. And I've had good feedback on that as far as that goes. There's not a lot of veterinary questions that I have on my website, but on my questionnaire, I have questions about who their vet is, how long, not necessarily how long have they used it, that kind of thing, but information. And I do request their phone number. And prior, if I like the questionnaire, responses, prior to the telephone call with my potential buyers, I do call the vets. And I had just an amazing one the last time. It was awful. I asked about spaying and neutering. And she said, oh, yes, six months, you know, if you're going to avoid that aggression thing. And I was just like, oh, my God.
What?
So I was just like, this is so bad. So it helps me have a conversation, you know, with these people, if I really like them. You know, they're going to need to change vets or, you know, because I won't allow that. I mean, it's just, I can't do that. Also the titer thing, you know, They may check yes on my questionnaire that they're willing to titer, but I have the conversation, do you know? So I call the vet first now, I've discovered, rather than have the conversation, because they'll go, yeah, they'll do it, you know. So those kinds of things. So it helps me more or less educate myself about, you know, what I can work with these potential puppy people. So I don't put all that information in my letter to them.
Will you share your website with us in the chat so people can see what you've put up on Breeder Questions?
Krieger's Ridge. I got a lot of, you know, information from you when Avedon first started.
I'm going to put it up there. Krieger's Ridge.
Yes. Plural.
Yeah. There you go.
So, great. You know, that I like that. It's Thank a very you. Simple one.
That's helpful.
Kelsey, did you want to chime in?
So I've been steering my puppy owners to look for integrative veterinarians. So they're getting traditional, holistic, and alternative all wrapped into one. And I've gotten far less pushback on anything with integrative vets. And they're not so out in left field. Like, for people that are used to a traditional vet, they feel comfortable going there versus, you know, trying to steer them to holistic vets.
Is there a list? Is that on the AVMA, the American Holistic Veterinary Medical Association? Is there a list, Kelsey? I haven't seen a list.
Yep, there is. And the other place you can find them is if you look like for deer free veterinarians, most integrative vets are also through there too.
What is it?
Fear Free. I just put it in the chat. Fear Free is a 3-year-old program, maybe a little bit longer, started by Marty Goldstein. Is that right? On certifying veterinarians who finally recognize that we don't have to terrify dogs and cats to treat them. And they might actually be easier to handle if we didn't terrify them. So, you know, they've gotten rid of white coats. They've taken classes on how to handle animals. It really is a good, I don't think it was Sophia that started it. Sophia died before it came out, unfortunately. Integrative physicians are great too, highly recommend them as well, but integrative veterinarians have followed suit. So, and the great thing about them, if you couldn't understand, Kelsey, is that they are traditional veterinarians who also use other treatments and believe in other treatments. And so you're, in my opinion, you are getting the best of all worlds with people who know Chinese medicine and know or use acupuncture and chiropractic and all the sort of larger complementary therapies, treatments that we have for our dogs that benefit. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, share it once you're done, share what you decide. I will say the one thing that I've found, and I'm happy to hear other people's opinions, is I'm extraordinarily cautious in telling people to change vets, even though like everything in me is saying, get out of that place, change your vet. I walk a really fine line doing that encouraging. I remember, is Mary on? Mary with that puppy that the vet hadn't given the right number of parvo, and she really did a nice job with those owners, and the owner realized, I've got to get out of here, I got to find another vet.
The vet would not pull for the titer, and then when the titer came back that the puppy was not protected, the vet response was, well, you've got an appointment in 3 weeks, we'll talk about it.
And it was 16 weeks old, 17 weeks old?
No, 19.
19 weeks old, so it, you know,
The last parvo vaccine was due at 16 weeks. And at 16 weeks, the puppy was given back to the owner and said, he's all done. And she thought everything was just fine. And then when she went in at 18 weeks to pull serum for the titer, the vet office wouldn't do it. And I was putting a lot of pressure on her to get it done because she works at a shelter. And I wanted to be certain that her puppy was protected because she might bring something home. And then finally she said at 19 weeks, my vet won't pull it. So at 19 weeks, we pulled the titer and Dr. Larson called and said, the puppy's not protected. And so we got the puppy in when her vet would not vaccinate, my vet vaccinated. And that's the only time in 34 years I have said to somebody, you need a different veterinarian. The only time. I've had some real big issues at times, philosophical differences and such, that I've had to help owners navigate. But this was the only time that I was very clear, because it was so blatant. Disregard for the health and life of the puppy.
Yeah, I find that if we not tap dance around it, but come at it indirectly, we're more likely to be successful. If you just tell people to switch vets, they're usually going to say no and stop talking to you. So
right.
we have to walk that line.
In this case, when you've got a vet that will not vaccinate a puppy that is proven not protected, since she works at a shelter, it was a no-brainer. It was she had no hesitation in changing veterinarians. I have had other people change their veterinarians after we've had gentle talks about how do you feel this is going, what would you like your outcome to be, how is this what you're looking for in your relationship of your veterinarian, and you know, and I support your decision, whatever you do, etc. But I usually follow their lead. If they aren't happy, I try to figure out why. And in some cases, help them to communicate better with their vet. Because sometimes owners, like someone was saying, you know, they get intimidated. And they're not, they get all tongue tied. You know, I encourage them to write their questions down, especially now when they can't even go in. We do have one vet up here that does allow owners to go in still. And they're kind of a little bit of a renegade, but you know, owners aren't there. And if they write these things down, they write their questions down, it helps. And then I also told owners that if they want me to talk to their vet, I will talk to their vet. If they have a question, please, if their vet has a question. And it has really helped. You know, especially this last time when we had a vet jump on and say a puppy had elbow dysplasia.
Oh God, that's been crazy too.
Yeah. And the puppy doesn't, we got that all verified, but I was on top of that right away, but the puppy does have panosteitis and, which I sent you an email related to
that. I did. Yeah. I just haven't gotten to it today.
Yeah, and
see it.
This owner is a little bit concerned because the vet, every time she goes in, oh, it's a golden, it's going to have these problems, da, 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 da. And it makes the owner nervous. And so it's going to have to be her decision if she goes somewhere else or has a heart to heart with the vet. And I've had some vets that I've gotten off on the wrong foot with a few times that, gosh, we're really good friends after 20 years. But it's, you know, it's a delicate thing. And in 34 years, one owner I've told to leave a veterinarian. Yeah. And that is because I felt the vet irresponsibly put the puppy at risk. And there was no vet in our community who would doubt that.
Dr. Larson.
And
Mary, I'm going to move on, but I want to remind everybody that in the Puppy College, there is a form that you can download to send in with your dog if you're still quarantined. And so you can't go in with your dog. And it gives information about the dog. Then it has the treatment. Why is the dog there? And one of the things that I've added, because all my dogs need to go in, is why is the dog there? You know, it needs a heartworm test or something. Please do not give any other treatment until you have spoken to me. because I want them to see in writing that they aren't going to give anything else. I don't care if my dog is due for whatever. They're not going to give anything else until they pick up the phone and call me. I'm sitting in the parking lot. And so it's not like we can't have a conversation. So that form is available if your buyers are in puppy college. That's available to them. You can make your own form if your buyers aren't in puppy college. You can, you know, create what you want. But that's one of the things we've provided for you and your buyers. And you know, after Eve's experience, now I think we need to say, you know, with our pregnant bitches, our whelping bitches, you know, no treatment until you have spoken to me aside from an exam or an ultrasound. Whatever you've put down on the form is what they should do, and then pick up the phone and call, unless it's an emergency. But barring an emergency, then that I think is really important. They should be able to tell you what they're doing and why. Okay. Other questions?
Oh, I have a question on the UC Davis has now, besides their VGL, they're doing other genetic testing now. What I can't remember is if they're linked to OFA, I didn't check it.
They are an approved lab. They aren't directly linked, I don't believe. So it doesn't, you know, you still have to pay the $750 and send the form in and all of that. But they are an authorized laboratory. They have, if you didn't see the note that went out, they've reached, I believe, the top certification for DNA testing.
That's which right.
It's really exciting. They're a great lab regardless. And they're the ones that are doing the breed genetic diversity testing and setting that up with breed clubs or breeders who want to study genetic diversity in their breed. So you can get regular DNA testing and you can get genetic diversity testing at UC Davis. Okay. They use a completely different program than Embark. And so, you know, they're sort of a different philosophy, different plan. Same, you know, for anything like PRA, you should get the same results. You know, if you're not getting the same results between Paw Prints and Embark or UC Davis and Embark, then you need to raise a red flag. That's what happened in I think they were toy poodles recently, where they had some discrepancies in testing.
Okay. And they did the NCL too, didn't they?
They did. University of Missouri, University of California, Davis popped in. So Golden Retrievers last year discovered they had this horrifying inherited neurologic disease that killed puppies by two in a really bad way. And UC Davis, University of Missouri found the gene and then passed it to others, and UC Davis was one of the labs that got on it very quickly.
Okay. So I could feel comfortable using them for
the animals. I have a bitch here to breed, and I was just ordering her test kits. Now I would recommend you order them through betterbred.com. I'll put that in because you're not going to pay anymore, but you get Better Bred's services.
Okay.
I put it in that link. And but you can only do that for genetic diversity, right, Barb? You can't do that for regular DNA tests. It's just genetic diversity.
I'm not sure if they're not launching into something else. I haven't been on that part of their website lately.
Huh. No, Rebecca or Natalie can pipe up. But if you're doing genetic diversity, Trish, then you want to do it through BetterBred or anybody. I would highly recommend it. And you're not going to pay anymore. You just get two services for the price of one.
Okay.
And your information doesn't get lost in transit. It's not out there. And that's critical. You know, it'll always be logged in there at BetterBred.
Okay, cool.
Terrific. Okay, Teresa says, quick question. I have a 2-year, 9-month-old female that's off for food and has a runny nose. She's drinking some water, no fever. At what point do I think need to think about going to the vet? Teresa, is she lethargic? Can you, yeah, hey.
I would say today she seems on the cold side a little bit. Yeah, and she just seems to be wanting to be by herself.
And Teresa, are you in the U.S. or Canada?
Canada.
So you're not, you guys don't celebrate Thanksgiving the same day we do. So you're not
ours
facing.
Ours is in October.
That's what I thought. Much, never mind. I would probably take her in tomorrow if you're not seeing an improvement, and obviously tonight, but I would monitor that temp.
Okay.
Doesn't sound like
no coughing, bit of a runny nose, but it's clear. Now, the day before, mom dog had pooed from the basement upstairs from the bedroom, and she was off her food the day before, but I just assumed maybe she had too many cow patty snacks on a walk. Hard to say, but
maybe you may have a virus. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, unless the vet really thinks it's bacterial, there isn't a lot you can do except for treat symptoms, but you want to just make sure that nothing else is going on. And then, you know, you sort of treat for symptoms. But,
okay. Do I need to take in stool samples or anything?
You know, if for the young bitch, if she has normal stools, you don't need to.
Okay.
But the runny nose is, you know, just not common in dogs. No. And anytime you're seeing sort of, I don't want to eat and I'm lethargic. Have you checked her gums and?
Yep.
And they're normal refill time?
She's sitting right beside me. Do you have normal refill? I'm going to say a little slow.
Are they pink?
Yep. Yeah, she's still
not
pink.
White, not gray, bright red.
No.
Yeah, I would give your vet a call and see when you can get in. But I don't think it's an ER trip right now. But, you know, you're looking at her. So.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. I hope she's feeling better.
Yeah, I just hate going to those vets when we got COVID because.
I know. To print out the form or write out what you want. I find it really important to write out because you're talking to a tech who may or may not be able to give the vet the information that you want them to get.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Super.
Good luck. Let us know how she is.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Laura says, pen hip scores. One of my 18-month-old puppies just had pen hip exam, DI. So that's the distraction index. Right was 0.41. Left is 0.55, breed average is 0.5. Finding says the dog is at moderate risk for hip osteoarthritis with some suspicion that cavitation may have occurred in the left hip. That's the 0.55. No evidence of OA in either hip. What do we do now? Retest, remove her from the breeding pool, modify activities, or is she okay? So in pen hip, 0.3 across all breeds is where they're going to say minimal risk of hip dysplasia. And so you're going to get moderate risk of hip dysplasia in almost like all of the average dogs in your breed because the average is 0.5. And so, you know, 0.41 and 0.55 aren't terrible scores. They're 50th percentile scores. So she's average for your breed. Now, do you take her out of the gene pool? What else does she have to offer? She's clear on everything else. She's got a great temperament. She's a, you know, good dog that you would have bred if she was 0.49, 0.41, right? I don't think there's a problem breeding her, but who do you breed her to? You look for OFA excellence in your breed. OFA excellence or, you know, pen hips, if you can find 0.3s in your breed, then go for 0.3s. Like really focus on those hips. Now, should you be treating her? Well, yeah, but we should be doing that almost with everybody. So joint supplements, fish oil, keep her fit, keep her weight down. She's not showing any arthritis right now. So, you know, if you play disc dog with her, I would quit. Because it's just not a very good sport for, it's not a very good sport for most dogs, frankly. But otherwise, moderate exercise, fit, weight, just like you would if she was any, you know, really those are things we should just be doing with our dogs.
Okay. Yes. So thank you for that. And I think also what contributes to this conversation is that she now lives in New Zealand and there are only like 20 tollers in New Zealand and none of them are very good quality. So she's like the best quality toller there is. And now there's disappointment after they've spent all this money to get her there that maybe her hips are taking her out of the breeding pool.
I think we have to remember what the brilliance of Penn Hip is. And the brilliance of Penn Hip is it gives you information without, you know, the Roman thumbs up, thumbs down to the gladiators. You know, it is, I know where I need to go now. And I, you know, maybe I wasn't putting hips really high on the list. You know, maybe I was thinking we would focus on eye shape, you know, what's it called in Toller's flash, you know, the white
chrome.
Yeah. Chrome. Mm-hmm. And you're going to say, okay, this next generation or with this bitch, I'm going to focus on hips. Don't give up everything else, but focus on hips because we know if we use Penn Hips to breed, we're going to improve hips. And so ship in semen, find the OFA excellent toller, bring semen in and then look at that next generation and say, okay, if I got 0.6s, you know, I probably have to cut bait. But if I've got 0.4s, I made an improvement. And that generation, I'm going to focus on hips one more time. There probably aren't many 0.3s in tollers, would be my guess. You know, that there are very few 0.3s in Goldens. It's Greyhounds, Siberians, Malinois, you can get those much better hip scores, but not in some breeds. It's a slow walk that way.
Thank you. Great.
Good luck.
Good news that I can report back to my breeder.
Okay, great.
My pup guy. Okay.
Good.
Gail, I have a question regarding Penn Hip.
Yeah.
So I've had puppies that have gone to organizations that use Penn Hip, and anywhere from 6 months to 18 months, they've done them on them, and they've scored absolutely horribly. And I've taken the puppies back, done OFAs on them. After two, they've all come back excellent. And so, I'm kind of frustrated with getting all these dogs dumped because of Penn Hip, and I don't understand why they're scoring so terribly. And even when we follow up with them 5 or 10 years down the road, they're still excellent.
Yeah. I don't understand why these organizations are so I sold a breeding bitch or placed a breeding bitch with a service dog organization, and they checked her and she had elbow dysplasia and hip dysplasia. So she came back to me. And, you know, she's 12 and she passed elbows and passed hips. So I get it. I can't tell you why I also have seen more poor x-rays out of, is this service dog organizations? Because that's been my experience. And I don't know why. I really can't tell you. I will say, just remember that Penn Hip and OFA do not need to correlate in any way. So I also had 55th percentile Penn Hips. She's actually the worst Penn Hip dog I've ever had. She was OFA excellent at 2. She was OFA excellent when she was spayed at 9. But I bred her based on her Penn Hips, and she's got like 50% OFA excellent kids with very tight hips, because I didn't say, oh, she's OFA excellent, I could breed her to, you know, a fair sire who maybe doesn't have the best pedigree. Because if you were just looking at OFA, you might think that. If you also bring Penn Hip in, you can say, okay, they're not quite as good as OFA says. OFA is looking at the conformation of the hip. They are not looking at the subluxation. They're not looking at how much space or laxity is in that joint. We will do better if we use both of those pieces of information over time. But I can tell you that the evaluation you're getting from those programs is valid. You know, you just, is the vet doing a bad job? Supposedly my bitch went to the University of Tennessee and got creamed. And then, you know, she gets at two, she finally gets her finals and they were great. Is that at all helpful, Kelsey? Like,
I don't know. Have anything to do with how they're growing? Because, I mean, I look at the x-rays and there's not laxity in them. And, you know,
the Penn Hip, you should try and get the Penn Hips. And see, because you can do the measurement in Penn Hip if you can get the Penn Hip x-rays.
So should I be redoing my adult dogs at Penn Hip to see if they still fall in the same range?
Well, how much dysplasia, like symptomatic dysplasia, are you seeing?
None.
So I think you say, my dogs are living long, active lives. I'm not seeing hip. You know, we're not worried about OFA milds. We're worried about OFA severes and OFA moderates that affect the life of the dog, or moderate hip dysplasia or severe hip dysplasia. If you're not seeing that, it doesn't have to be a priority for you. So once you get everything else done, Kelsey, then you say, okay, now I'm going to turn to hips and I'd like to tighten them up a little. But, you know, we're not doing Penn Hips and OFAs to produce Penn Hip and OFA x-rays. We're doing it to produce dogs that have healthy, active lives throughout their lifetime. So I think, you know, you go through ITDB and you say, what are my breeding goals? I don't have a problem with hip dysplasia. It's not going to be a top goal. I'm not going to breed dysplastic dogs, but and I think that's perfectly fine. I would say next, like, I would like to see those x-rays because you'll get an idea of what they're seeing. But Penn Hip, far more than OFA, has research that shows that that those early x-rays are pretty valid. And that if anything, the numbers go down with age, and nobody really knows why, particularly in bitches, interestingly enough. But they don't go down a lot. They're not going from a 0.7 to a 0.4. They're going from a 0.4 to a 0.36. So I think maybe you confirming that this is a valid x-ray, that, you know, that it truly was done properly. Because if you're not seeing any and they're seeing a lot, then that does call, and you're looking at the same dog, you know, you're looking at the same dog, then it sort of calls into question one of the tests, and it would be worth looking at. Okay, Kimberly, Border Collie bitch came in season November 3rd, which was 3 weeks ago. On the 3-point, you did first progesterone on the 10th, and she was 3.27. The second on the 12th, and she was 7.7. And on the third, she was 14. So we inseminated the next day. Okay. TCI. Okay. Is there a question, Kimberly? Is she pregnant? Do we know? No, you're only 3 weeks out. So are you looking for confirmation on the timing of that? Is Kimberly still on? Hey.
Yes,
Hey, Gail.
Yeah. Hi, Kimberly. There you are. You're in the top.
I am looking for confirmation. According to the repro vet, our timing was good. The semen report looked good. We do have an ultrasound for December 11th, which is the date that they suggested. But, you know, nervous mom here, eagerly anticipating that day when I can find out.
Yep. So I would say, I don't know what they pinpointed ovulation as.
They're saying the 10th was
highly unlikely.
The 10th was 3.27. So they were saying the 12th at 7.7.
So it could be the 11th and it could be the 12th. It could be either one. Either way, your timing was fine.
Okay.
Your timing was fine. So if it was, so the reason I'm saying it was the 11th, because if she came in at, so 3.27 is usually between the LH peak and ovulation. And so we will typically see the LH surge and then 48 hours or 2 days and then ovulation. So that would put ovulation on the 11th. And if she was 4.0, which is can be the right level for ovulation, then the 7.7 is 3 points higher than that. And so that could have been the confirmatory progesterone. But if she ovulated on the 11th, eggs were ripe on the 13th and remained ripe till the 15th. So the only reason it might matter a little is on your whelping window.
Right.
You know, it is nice to know. But personally, if she was mine, I would assume that her LH peak was on 11.9, and I would run my whelping window based on that. Did you do diestrus or get diestrus?
I did not.
Get that microscope.
No, I
you can do it.
I did vaginal cytology to start the whole process.
Oh.
And that's when I started the appointment for the first progesterone was based on the cytology that I did. And I actually did look at my Sheltie bitch, who also ran in season at the same time. I didn't do any progesterone testing on her.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, you were breeding her to your boy.
That I have, right. Yep. So I didn't do any time around her, but she confused the heck out of me because she came into season on the 4th. And up until yesterday, she was still flirting with the boys and, you
don't
know.
Don't trust them. Oh, I didn't trust them. They're bad news.
Oh, boys are horrible.
So have you seen diestrus in her? In the
I have. Yes. Yesterday, okay. I believe was day one of diestrus for her.
Oh, great. Terrific.
So terrific. I did see that change from cornified to parabasal cells. And I went,
it's amazing, isn't it?
I know. Yeah, it's like, look for that. And I saw it. It was great.
It's pretty cool. It really is. Cause it just happens so quickly and there's not a lot of, do you think it is? It's like,
no,
there they are.
It just shows up. Yeah. It was pretty cool.
Well, if you don't have diestrus on the border collie, I would assume that LH was 11.9 and sort of base everything off of that. There's no way to confirm it. You know, ovulation could have been the 11th, could have been the 12th, could have been at midnight. You know, that's always our problem is, you know, we count days and it's really minutes.
Yeah.
But that would be my guess.
I was actually listening to the Avidog audio on ovulation timing as I was driving back home with her because it's a 2-hour ride one way to the repro vet and back. So I had 4 hours of time to kill. So you accompanied me on that journey.
I love that. I love that. We're trying to figure out how to download more of those audios so people can listen to them. So
it was helpful. Thanks so much.
Yeah. So let us know that December 11th.
Yep. And I was also the one with assisting my friends with the Dog de Bordeaux.
Oh, yeah, and the 10 pups.
Yeah. It was an interesting delivery. The x-ray confirmed 15, and they did not want to do a cesarean section on her.
with their particular breed knowledge. They said bleeding dysphagias and other breathing issues. They actually used the Boxer anesthesia protocol on Dog de Bordeaux. So they wanted to whelp naturally. We had six puppies that were just flying right out, beautiful. They came out with nice Apgar scores. And then she went into a pause. And they had Pitocin on hand. We had plenty of calcium. And I said, guys, this is the spot where you need to make a decision, because it was a large litter. There's a lot of pups that still need to come out. And, you know, she's pausing for about an hour and a half now. And I want it to go now. And they were like, okay, let's use the first dose of Pitocin. And we did. And we got a dead puppy.
How much did you give?
I don't know that, Gail.
Like 100?
The shot. Yeah, the shots were measured out by her vet.
Good.
So the first shot was, you know, a dead puppy. I mean, there was nothing I could do to get this pup back. And then the second puppy that came out, like whizzing right out, another dead puppy. And then the third puppy came out alive and kicking. So it was like, okay, guys, this is what was causing that pause. And we can't let her go another 2 hours before we do something. And so she hit another pause and we gave her another shot of Pitocin. We had another dead puppy and several more lives. So it went back and forth, and it really confused me as to how, you know, 12 and a half hours, the first puppy was born at 4:30 in the morning and, you know, alive and well, the deceased puppies were in that whelping pause. And then there were live and dead puppies after, including the last 14th puppy, which was alive at 4 something in the afternoon. So 12 hours.
It's amazing, isn't it? So have you read the stillborn report that I did based on that study? So if you haven't read it, it is in the labor and whelping module now. I think it's all the way to the bottom. So it's like 7.9, you know, section 7.9 or something. And they very clearly showed that the clock is ticking. So what, you know, I've usually had the 2 hour clock, although I'm like you, like at an hour, I'm really feeling it. They basically said 62 minutes.
62 minutes.
And yeah, after 62 minutes, you go from, I don't remember the numbers, but maybe somebody else can pull it up, but maybe at 40 minutes, 4% puppies are stillborn. You know, you're going to get stillborns in puppies.
Right.
After 62 minutes, you're like at 36%. You're at this massive high level. Mm-hmm. So a couple things about these, what we feel like are unusual whelpings. Remember, there are two horns. Mm-hmm. And they, in some ways, puppies alternate between the two horns, but we don't know if it's, you know, right horn, then left horn, then right horn, then left horn. But if the end of one of her horns was problematic, you know, it's got CEH, it's got endometrial hyperplasia, or it just isn't the most viable. I mean, thanks. She used all the space in her mm-hmm. uterine horns for this. You know, maybe those dead puppies were coming from there, were coming from that horn. Then you get a live one, then you get a dead one, then you get a live one. So what looks like strange that some would be dead and some would be alive may have been different horns. Could be. It also is very much the location in the uterus. You know, the further back they are in the uterus, the poorer the location to sustain them. And how old was she again? Was she five?
No, she's only three.
She's three.
Yep,
so
she's three.
It
maiden ditch at three.
It could be endometrial hyperplasia, which can start very early in some breeds. It can start very early. So that means the lining of the uterus, endometrium, is changing. It's not changing in a great way. And if a puppy implants where it's changed, they're not going to be very viable. You know, they're going to struggle. And the last thing I was thinking is go look at the stillborn report, because they talk about the nutrition, the placenta no longer being able to provide adequate nutrition to the puppies. And it's a pretty rapid deterioration in the placenta. And so the placenta becomes problematic. And puppies are not, it's not like there's a clock where every puppy runs out of nutrition at the same time and runs out of oxygen at the same time. It is going to vary. And really, 12 hours. It could have varied over that 12 hours for those puppies. You definitely want to be early in the birth order in puppydom. That significantly improves the likelihood of being born normal. But you can share with them that stillborns, you know, I think the percentage overall is like 6% of puppies are stillborn. So not an uncommon thing. Large litters, look, there's litter size in there. You can look at all the statistics, but I think it's helpful to us.
There was one puppy that obviously had stressed in utero because there was meconium. So that puppy, you know, we didn't spend a lot of time on because it was like, okay, the next one's coming out and you guys need to decide. Like, my goal is to make sure that Maddie is okay. And, you know, here's a criteria that you need to figure out. What's more important for me, to be in there with the bitch that's whelping or to try and bring back this puppy, which
we know has a low chance. You can save them.
Yeah.
But you know, when you have 10, 11, 12 puppies, you're going to put a lot of time into that one puppy.
Yep.
And we only have limited time, you know, and so you have to say, and you're going to put a lot of time into that puppy over the next 3 weeks.
Right.
You know, it's not like typically in very rare cases, they'll be kind of normal once you clean them out. But typically they're going to be weak. They aren't going to have the strength to nurse. Infections become a problem. And so I don't think that's an unreasonable decision to make. It's a hard decision when it's your first litter, but it's not at all an unreasonable decision.
But 10 puppies doing well. Most of them have doubled their weight in 9 days. There are two or three that needed some supplementation, but overall the knowledge that I've gained through this group allowed me to be better prepared in assisting with a breed that I'm unfamiliar with. And I mean, I've dealt
with a little different than yours.
Oh my, way different than mine. First of all, brachycephalic breed, and man, are they beasts. The big ones, the big ones are just bowling over the smaller ones going, yeah, this teeth's mine, forget about it.
It's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama.
I can't see, is that you?
When I take the bench, I take.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, okay. yeah, you know, you do have to really monitor those little ones. The big one, big get bigger, the little get smaller unless we step in. And it's a puppy eat puppy world out there. I always say, you know, I know they look really cute, but that is survival of the fittest, looking at 2-day-old puppies. It is absolutely a war in there to survive. Cool. Well, congratulations, Kimberly. Pen hips at 12, Francisca, you can do pen hips as early as 4 months. I would not recommend it though. I think I would stick close to 12, 11 to 12 months. I know pen hips says that they are very valid at 4 months, but I personally am not convinced. If you are really unsure about keeping a puppy, then you could shoot it at 4 months. But I would expect some change at 12. Usually not going to be significant, but some. Laura's asking about Giving Tuesday. I got to tell you, I know I'll probably get in trouble, but absolutely all of my support today goes to the American Kennel Club Canine Health Foundation. I think that they are doing amazing work, and I know we see AKC in it. And if you don't have purebred dogs or AKC registered dogs, you feel uncomfortable, but they do research, you know. So if you haven't heard the story, I think it was about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I suddenly had 6 puppies from 3 different litters who all developed this neurologic condition called steroid responsive meningitis arterioses. So, you know, I'm now 36 years into breeding and I have never had a case of SRMA. And now I have 3 litters, 6 puppies. And I don't even know what this disease is. I got smart pretty quickly. And what I began to notice was that I had the same grandsire for all three of those litters. So all those puppies had the same grandsire. And I started hearing about other puppies and they almost all were second or third generation from him. So it wasn't, he wasn't producing it, but something was happening in multiple generations. And I love this dog. I would use him again in a heartbeat. I mean, just a magnificent dog, but problem. So I reach out to Diane Brown, the CEO of AKC Canine Health Foundation. She finds money. She finds a researcher. We got a publication out of it. They are now looking for the gene in Griffons, wire-pointing Griffons and Goldens, because it clearly is inherited. They are, in my opinion, the most responsive organization. I like Morris, but I love AKC Canine Health Foundation. So I would, that's where I think we're good to go. Thank you, Francisca. You like my hair? That's the natural me. I stopped dyeing it. I mean, stopped. I just couldn't figure out how to do it myself. So, and I'm not going into hair salon here. Terrific. Other questions? Barb?
I just reached out to Natalie and know they, at the moment, they do not offer any other kind of testing other than genetic diversity testing. But she did say that if you order the test through them for genetic diversity testing, obviously UC Davis VGL does all of the, you know, scientific part of it. And they keep your swab on hand. So any other test that you would order through VGL, you do not need to have any other tests. You would just say, hey, I want this test done, and they'd use your other swab that's already there on your VGL account.
There you go.
Create a account.
So I'll put it in again.
Do the magic.
Natalie's been on with us. Oh, nope. Don't look at that one. I can't delete it. But better breed. It's better bred.
That's right.
So I got it on. So there, it's a great place.
Tests, so that was good.
Yeah. Order it directly. You know. If you're doing genetic diversity, and then you can add on PRA, ICK, right. DM, whatever. Yep.
Right.
And they're a good research organization too. So they being VGL, UC Davis VGL. So they're helping look for new genes, et cetera. Last call, Barb.
Happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
So happy Thanksgiving, guys. Even if you are not in the US and don't celebrate, this is a year that Thanksgiving should be celebrated like every day. So enjoy your week. Don't forget on December 16th, we are doing Living with Intact Dogs. We are doing a Black Friday sale. So watch your email. We will have information out. And we would so appreciate you spreading the word about Puppy College and Breeder College. That would mean the world to me, because we are much better dog breeders than marketers. And we just aren't very good at the marketing department. We'd love to have your buyers in Puppy College. That would be great. And don't forget, you guys, our Thanksgiving gift is 10% off your next payment. So you already have that.
One thing.
So, Trish.
All of my puppy people, pretty much all of them, are doing Puppy College. Especially because we don't really have, you know, classes to go to in person now. So I'm using that as a tool to get them. And then some of them are younger and they're going, oh, cool, something we can look at online.
Yeah. Terrific. Yeah. And I've been on with Sarah on the puppy coaching calls, and she's pretty amazing. So highly, highly recommended. And I think we're finally, you know, we have our courses up, but we're finally getting lessons up, like week one and week two. So we'll probably have week one up this week if my website guy doesn't have a bad case of COVID. So we apologize for being somewhat delayed in that. So I'm going to head off. My mom just walked in the door and we've all been quarantining for 2 weeks and we all just got our test results. So I haven't seen her in a really long time. So I'm going to go see my mom. So thank you guys. Take care.